Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the War Report. It's been a little while. We have a new year, and it's, what, been 4 or 5 weeks since we've been on? And I'm hoping you guys came back and that you missed us, like we missed you, and that we get off to a good start. Today's show, oh, by the way, if you got our promotion, you know we always invite you to call in, and I'm going to do the same today because I really would like to hear your reflections as opposed to me giving you for an hour my reflection. I'm prepared to do that, but I think it would be a much more meaningful show if you guys shared your reflections on 2017, and as our promotion stated, how the events that impacted you really relate to the overall war that we've been experiencing in a formal fashion, as I've always argued, from at least 2002, the signing of No Child Left Behind. I call that the formal declaration of war on public education. Before that, we had, as I've also stated, I don't know how many times, we had the Sputnik. I go back to Sputnik, when Sputnik was launched and the world, at least the United States, were frightened to death almost about the Russians having beat us into space, manned space flight, gotten a monkey up in space, circled the globe, came back, still alive, and like, wow, how did this happen? Well, it happened, according to some people here in the United States, because the damn school system in this country is so lousy that the Russians could get ahead of us in this space war because their schools or their scientists were so much smarter than us, and that was because we had such terrible school system and teachers, and there you have it. Then we had a nation at risk that echoed the same thing in terms of our school system being so bad, and the teachers and the curriculum, all that stuff, that, you know, public education, that if a foreign entity, an unfriendly foreign entity, inflicted upon our education system the way in which we have done it, we would consider that an act of war by that foreign enemy. And then, you know, we come up to, this was Reagan's time and Reagan's promise that he was going to dismantle Jimmy Carter's Department of Education. And Milton Friedman, who had been promising and pushing school choice, school vouchers, tax credit, ever since the 1954 Supreme Court decision declaring segregation unconstitutional. So we've been in this a long, long time. And each year, there have been things that have happened that becomes cumulative. And if you don't see them as being cumulative and only focus in on isolated events that have happened, maybe just happened on to you or your school, you miss the big picture and you miss the historical significance of whatever that isolated incident that you're focusing on, how it plays into the overall war scenario. And to me, that's crucial that we understand, become aware. Remember the paradigm that we use here, understanding, awareness, emotional engagement, and then hopefully individual or collective positive social action. Well, in order for you to really be able to get through that paradigm, you have to really understand history and how these events, not just in here talking about public education, all eventually are linked in some type of historical time frame to give an impact. And so I ask that today we look at what happened in 2017, not in isolation, but what took place and then how those events fit into the historical pattern. And remember what I always say, my guy, Edmund Burke, those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. So I'm hoping that someone or ones will call in and we can have a shared conversation. And so here's our number again for call in toll free. It's 888-627-6008. I'll repeat that. 888-627-6008. It's sort of like a curious thing that today's topic is going to be on reflections of 2017. Almost a year and three weeks ago, I did the similar reflection, not on air, but on my notes and the stuff that I was working on. And I made a list of things that had happened during back in 2016. And back then, I was looking at what was going on, and it was amazing to me. And today, I was going through my notes, and I found the same thing. Those things that I had listed in 2016 and now 2017 was just incredible. But anyway, that's how I sort of like got to the day. And this past Thursday, talking to Joe Lieb, Joe put out a post calling for reflections. He and I hadn't talked, and I was amazed that she too was thinking that it was a time for reflection and how she felt, how things had happened that impacted her as related to the war and what have you. This weekend, so I guess some people either are influenced by what Joe had put out, they spent the entire weekend posting on Facebook issues pertaining to reflection. And they spent the whole weekend. I was amazed that this notion of reflection was picking up. I'm not attributing it to anything that I had said or done up to this point, but it was a time for other people to get into this reflective mood and et cetera. And so as we start off, my thing would be, where are we now in this war? Are we any closer to, I say, turn the tide in our favor? By that, I'm saying that we are losing, and I've been saying this, and we have been losing on individual fronts, collective fronts. And so did anything happen in 2017 that would suggest maybe we are turning the tide in our favor, or the things that happened in 2017 just amplified the depth and breadth of how close we are to losing the war. I see we have a caller. Are you there, caller?
I am.
Hello?
Hello.
And you,
hi.
You are?
This is Victoria Young.
Hey, Vicky. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Oh, wow. Folks, if you don't know, Vicky, I sometimes want to call you Dr. Young so that people know that, you know, your Dr. Young here is, I'm going to say she's a friend of mine. I hope I'm not being presumptuous.
Not
and
at all.
We have had many conversations. She has contributed to the War Report almost sometime daily in terms of her posts. She is my resident expert on what we used to call what the ES, what's called Left Behind, and then the, Vicky, what's the initial again?
Now it's ESSA, the Every Student Succeeds Act.
Mm-hmm.
But originally, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act.
That's the one
where
I was
it gets
confusing.
Right,
that's what I was trying to get to. Yeah. So, what's your reflection, Vicky?
Well, I got to tell you, James, you know I'm generally the optimist, but I woke up on the wrong side of the bed this morning, and that's unusual for me. So, I think the year went overall extremely bad. And there's some real specifics on that. You know, not only do we have, this major political coup going on, you know, with DeVos kind of the head of that, but, you know, the data collection bills that came up through Congress, the ESSA being funded by Congress, and then just the targets that they seem to have set. And they seem like they're going to go after them no matter, you know, every which way they can. They weren't able to get, I guess the good news was, a little bit of it, was those original education tax credits, the scholarship programs that they had planned to get in at the federal level. It doesn't appear that they fully did that. But now, of course, they are targeting the states as all the state legislators are gearing up. And, you know, those are actually American Legislative Exchange Council, those ALEC laws. And I think that's something, you know, maybe, again, that's a bright point. I mean, that is certainly a fighting point. There's a lot of people in the country that understand the damage that has been done by having an organization that basically is writing the laws for our lawmakers. You know, I call them lawmakers.
Vicky, let me stop you for a second. We have another caller,
Okay. Someone
that you know. But I want you to stay there, Vicky, because I'm coming back to you. Caller,
okay.
Are you there?
I'm here, Dr. Miller. How are you doing? It's Jesse.
This is Dr. Jesse, the Walkman Turner. Long time no here, Jesse.
No, but I always catch you on the online when we listen on the stuff like that. I'm always listening to the War Report. You want to be informed, you listen to James.
Jesse, you know, Vicky's on now,
yeah.
So I'm going to finish getting her stuff,
yeah.
Then get your views, and maybe the three of us have a conversation. So, Vicky, go back to what you were saying.
About how that, you know, what they missed in getting some legislation done last year on the federal level, they look to be picking up on the different state levels, you know, as this legislative session, especially in our state, is coming up. But I think one of the real, you know, there's two really alarming things for me, you know, things that I think people, well, three actually, that we need to do to protect students, and that's the data collection piece, the rural schools, and higher education. I mean, higher education is high on their radar, and anytime Lamar Alexander says he's going to do something, it does seem to get done. So the higher education bill right now is really pretty alarming, and our state is also, I think you're going to see it across the states, They made this coordinated political strategy to, you know, put federal pieces in place at the same time they put state pieces in place, and it all works really against what we've been fighting for. So with that, I will let you see what Jesse's opinion is here, and Happy New Year, Jesse.
Don't go away, Vicki.
Oh, I won't. I'll stay here.
Your reflections, Jesse.
All right. Well, Happy New Year, Vicki, and Happy New Year, James, and Happy New Year to everyone in the audience. Well, my reflections are, lately I've been reading a lot about Frederick Douglass and looking at particularly his old speeches, and I've been inspired by his 1857 speech where he talks about emancipation for the West Indies. And it's that speech is often quoted where people talk about power never concedes anything, you know, never will, never did, that kind of stuff. But he talks about you can't have progress without struggle. So when I'm looking back on 2017, I see my positives in the connections with the allies, Moral Mondays, Black Lives Matters, the Dreamers, so spreading the net to be more inclusive of a greater civil rights peace. So that's what I look at. I think 2017 was a great year. It was a great year, not legislatively, so Vicki's right on target there, but in terms of growing the resistance. I think 2017, and I think America's greatest gift to education, anti-reform resistance, is this president.
Jesse, you know, for how many years now, we've called each other, you've called me the pessimist, and I've called you the optimist. And I tell you, no, I am not a pessimist, nor am I an optimist. I consider myself to be a realist. And then you would say, yeah, and we sort of like both meet at the realist middle right here. I'm laughing over here because this is pure Jesse, folks. This is pure Jesse.
That's it.
A nuclear bomb was dropped in 2017, and Jesse says, but it brought us together. And that's a good thing. And Jesse, you know, I will have to say, I think you are right on. And by the way, I read your piece earlier when you talked about, you know, Frederick Douglass and all those other things that you mentioned in terms of progress is made out of struggle. And yes, we saw in 2017, and by the way, I'm not critiquing what you said, nor am I providing any sort of analysis. I'm just sort of like restating it and putting it into maybe a different kind of framework. But yes, we did see groups wake up. We saw individuals wake up. And hopefully, as you just stated, this year we will be able to build on what took place last year, including the negative. And Vicki, what you said, that the alliance between Alex and the states who seek to influence not just the states but also the federal grew last year, and we can see the results of that growth and what's going to happen this year across the country. And yes, and as you said, Vicki, maybe, just maybe, if the public, when I say public, I'm talking about teachers, parents, even students, begin to become aware of what this legislation really entails and its potential impact, maybe then they will join together give Jesse's optimistic view more credence, in the sense that more people then will get involved on the resistance side.
Oh, I think so also. Definitely, I agree with Jesse that it does feed into the resistance. And I think once more people, you know, that were fighting, in Occupy and these other organizations that were really, really heavily involved in politics, what, back in 2009 through 11, right in there. I think as they all start to come back, they'll realize, you know, our fights are all the same. We're being controlled basically by the 1%. And for them to say it isn't class war, well, that's just that Orwellian doublespeak. It absolutely is class warfare that we're experiencing. So I am hopeful in that way.
And that's something for you too, Vicki. Over the years that we've talked, you're in the optimistic class, but then some into the realistic category, and occasionally into the pessimistic, but you're still pulling it towards the optimistic spectrum there. And coming from you, a person whom I have, like Jesse, tremendous amount of respect for, because you have been studying this, been out there as sometimes by yourself, trying to make the world aware of what was going on. That's encouraging that you think that, oh, there still may be something that will come out of 2017 into 2018 that will help us build the resistance and help the resistance to start notching up some favorable results. Is that a fair assessment? Or say summary. Summary. Jesse?
It's a fair assessment, James. And, I was in a conversation on Facebook yesterday with Joe Lieb, Terry Prowse from Florida, Mark Nason, and others, and they were talking about the fatigue of this fight. And we came away with this idea that 2018, we got a resistance 2.0. And yes, the struggle, like Douglas said, it will continue because it's a lifetime struggle. But what we were going to do is put a positive twist on it. We're going to be building and striving communities, schools, and families. And we're going to take care of each other because this is a long-term struggle. And I've been at this now for nearly two decades. So if it's that pace, we have to be healthy enough to see it, to see the end. So we said we'll do walk and talks. We'll take care. We'll give each other chicken soup when they're sick. We'll call each other. We'll try to do healthy things. We'll take yoga classes together. But one of the important things out of 2017 is the realization, just as Vicki has said, and as you have been saying all along, James, this is a neoliberal war on us, and it's a long-term war. And what we need to do is be healthy enough to endure the struggle, to see it to the end. So if there's a twist on 2018, I'm telling the resistors to do something that also improves your health, your wellness. Connect your activism to something that improves you physically. Take care of the mind, the body, and the spirit. And if we do this, we will win, and we will be there, live to see the day that these neoliberals and Alec and all of them fall.
That's that optimistic view.
Well, no, it's a realist one also, because that's true. We've lost along the way, you know, over the years, we've lost a lot of people to health issues. I mean, it is a stressful thing. It's, you know, we don't understand how the other side sleeps at night. But what that says when we say that is that we have sleepless nights, and that's not good. I'm absolutely with Jesse. Last week I started back at an athletic club because, I, you know, the 2017 was not the best year in the war.
Well, and putting my thoughts down, preparing for the show, of course, something you just said, Vicki, I looked at the people we lost, mm-hmm. people who, and Jesse, you sort of like alluded to it too, you started in the early 2000s, and I was going to say put out to the public that's listening here today, if you've been in this for any length of time, look around you today. Who is still in the war beside you, down the street from you, across the country from you, when you started? And how many people have left the war because of, one, it's been a long war, but fatigue, for fear, for any number of reasons, in isolation or in combination. And that's what I was looking at. And I was reflecting, Jesse, and I've said this, Jesse, I don't know how many times. Remember when we were in Pennsylvania at the opt-out national conference?
Yes,
you came up to me. You came up to me. I was sitting at a small table. I was charging my equipment, and you came up to me and you said, and almost, because I remember this almost word for word, you said, I just got out of a breakout session. Every breakout session that I've been in, the word neoliberalism is being discussed. What neoliberalism mean? He said, I said to myself, somewhere James has to be smiling. Because before James, we had never heard of neoliberalism. Now, everyone is talking about neoliberalism. You remember saying that to me, Jesse?
I remember it well, and you know, it's the same thing. We can also say the same. Vicky's always given us this legislative insight that, you know, on ALEC and so many other things that's been insightful. We have so many, and when I was thinking about 2017, that's when we lost Joan Kramer, and we lost her to cancer. But what a role model she was for an activist everywhere. And even towards the end, she, although Joan had health care, she was an advocate for health care for all, and you can see a picture and a sign carrying it with her husband. But to me, some of this is not only that we need to know the things that this is neoliberalism, not only that we need to know the legislative agenda against us, that this is a war against us, but we need to take care of each other and watch our health. So you're right, Jim. You did our TED Talk, and I wondered how someone could explain neoliberalism in less than 15 minutes. You were perfect. So, you've taken neoliberalism down from a course of PhD students to everyday person can understand it and get it. Good stuff there.
Well, and I think we have to, you know, even though it wasn't last year, I think when we look at all the information that various people have contributed over the years, every bit of information is important in some way or another. You know, their side spread misinformation. We have tried hard to bring the truth forward. And I think in general, we do a good job amongst ourselves. You know, it's just time that we are able to express it, like you're saying James did for neoliberalism. We need to, you know, take the concepts we're familiar with and try and sing outside that choir, like we, you know, we always said. But I did want to bring up the Save Our Schools group, because working with, you know, Jesse, you and I were both part of that. Working with that group, though, I mean, I think we learned a lot and gained a lot of insight from the various views in trying to put that thing together, you know, and pull it off. And I think that right now the resistance could learn a lot from how we ended up doing it. I mean, I don't think we knew what we were doing when we started, but we certainly did do some things right that got us to the point, you know, where we had what I still consider a successful march in Washington, D.C., brought a lot of people together. A lot of those people have stayed together. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there that, you know, that there are just so many people. You know, we get on the radio and get credit for this or that, or, you know, we're the bloggers, we've got the sites, but there's just so many people. Like even last night, somebody put out a little bit of information on something I had posted, and boy, that little bit of information they shared with me, you know, sent me somewhere I probably didn't want to go to find out information I didn't want to know, but at least I know it. And, it, you know, you have to believe it'll be useful at some point as we go along. But there's, you know, there's a lot of people out there. I call them, I've labeled them now the villains. So, a lot of people in my villain file, but like I said, every time somebody comes out with something, it can add one more piece to the puzzle, and eventually I think it'll become clear to a lot more people.
Well, here's the, I'm going to say realist, Jesse, and that could take in both the pessimistic and the optimistic viewpoint. Here's the realist, I don't know, perceptions that I have from this past year. We lost a lot of people. Yes, Joan was very, very, you know, dear to me. I think people know that. She was an admin here on the War Report. She was a very close friend, ally. We were family. We call ourselves a family. And, yes, we lost her. And when losing her, we lost a very constant voice trying to make people aware that this is, we're in a war. Not an assault, not an attack, but we're in a war. And that it started maybe small, but it has grown, and it's becoming a Goliath. She was very much into that. So when I was looking back, yes, Jesse, missing Joan was one of the things that I put on my list. But I also was saying, you know, we lost Peggy Robinson. And I'm not just talking about individuals, but lost organizations that we don't see anymore. And on the other side, I saw growth. I saw the other side getting stronger. And, of course, being the realist that I am, I didn't like what I saw in terms of a summation of the end of this year. But then there were some positives. One of the things that I saw was that students, high school students, and I've mentioned this during the year, more high school students are getting engaged in the war. I saw a couple new student unions popping up in different states, different cities. Back in 2016, 2017, we knew about the student union in Newark. I knew about the student union in Philadelphia. But now there are a few others. If, I don't know, for those of you who have been with the show for any length of time, you know, back in 2015, 16, I tried very, I don't know, as hard as I could, to get the student union in Newark to join up with the student union in Philly, help strengthen each other, and then seek to bring in more students to create student unions in their cities, their states, so that we would have a national presence of students involved. I even promised to give the War Report to this new entity in terms of every other week or at least once a month. So I was encouraged to some extent this year that the students are taking notice. I mean, sure, they know the impact of the high-stakes testing and the cutting of budgets and closing of schools, getting rid of teachers, all of that stuff. But now I saw, and I was encouraged by this, students are becoming more aware, they understand more, and I think I'm beginning to see more emotional engagement, that paradigm that we talk about here, and more activism. That was me, the biggest takeaway that I came away with from 2017. On the opposite side, of course, some dude occupied the White House, and he was worse than the two presidents that occupied it for the last 16 years before he came. And I'm saying worse than in terms of education. And, of course, you know my political views. I don't think any of them are worth a shit. So he's worse in that regard as well. And so I see this as a loss, because in order for him to have gotten into that office, look at the millions of people who voted for him, knowing his agenda and what it would mean if he was victorious, and the people who, on the other side, who, knowing what his agenda was going to be, was unable to get the numbers necessary to keep him from getting in office. Now, let me just stop for a minute here. I am very much aware that there could have been, and most likely was, collusion that led to fraudulent victory. That's my stance. I believe that took place. But anyway, that to me was devastating. Just devastating. So,
well, I want to go back to I wrote something down before I got on the phone about bright spots, because I you know, even though I got up on the wrong side of the bed, I was trying to come on being optimistic. So I wrote down a bright spot, and I thought that was Virginia, with Ralph Northam getting elected, you know, the Democrat ahead of the Republican. Now, I don't really think it has to do with that. What made it a bright spot for me was the fact that early on in his campaign, even though he was a Democrat, he came out against Obama's education policies. And he gathered votes, I believe, and, you know, just from the reports I got, you know, that based on that fact, even though he was a Democrat, he did not favor Obama's you know, routine standards testing, accountability, all of that. And so to me, you know, to see him win and to see him gain momentum during his campaign, campaigning on that type of platform, I thought that's what really gave me hope. And I was hoping that, you know, that carries over into 2018, that candidates learn from that. I mean, we're electing people saying that education is important. We're letting governors and chief state school officers run the show. But when they're elected, we're not asking them questions about education policy to see if they even know enough. You know, and that's where I think, you know, this whole thing, I think that was their strategy all along, you know, is to not only spread misinformation, but to also not be transparent. You know, to not have those open discussions so that people actually could think a little bit for themselves, you know, if they wanted to. So when you never ask your candidates specific questions about education policy and practices, where, you know, we can't make it clear to the public that, you know, this isn't working. Just like with standards and testing, I've asked a couple of people, where's the proof it works?
Well, I didn't follow policy, as you guys know. But I'm glad you brought this up, because that would go down in my book as a positive.
Oh, yeah. And I hope it carries over. And I think, you know, I think that's the bridge, you know, you bringing up the youth and their engagement. I really do think that is the bridge between 2017 and 2018. I went to a political meeting recently, and I kind of sat back and listened and looked, and it's the young people that I saw at that meeting that are really starting to become more aware, and they're seeing a way out. That's the encouraging part.
Vicki, you brought a smile to my face, and the first thing I want to say is you know me too well. These years that we've been together, you know me too well. That's where I'm heading, folks, in 2018 and beyond. I'm going to talk about this a little later, this month or next month, that I'm making a transition, and I'm going where Vicki just talked about and where I mentioned in terms of seeing more of the youth, young people, getting into this. But bravo, Vicki. Thank you for bringing that up. I wasn't going to mention it, but, yeah, that's where I'm heading. Jesse, you were going to say something.
Sure, I was going to say. We also have bright spots in 2017. The NAACP Task Force on Quality Education reconfirmed their moratorium on charter schools. We have Brother G2, and the Journey for Justice with a We Choose campaign that's nationwide. I went to D.C. with Bishop Zeldas from Oral Mondays in Connecticut for their announcement, their national press conference. And what I'm finding is, sorry, I got a little bit of a cold, but in communities of color, it used to be you can say the word charter and people would jump. Now they're ready to jump you. The idea of for-profit charters in communities of color, and not only communities of color, but in rural communities as well. They're like, what, you want to bring a charter school around here? So that is a positive. We have, this is not something that has to be explained. I think people of color have stepped forward in 2017. They are leading that charge in many ways. So while other groups have faded out, I think groups like Journey for Justice and the We Choose campaign are stepping up major in that piece. So that's a positive out of 2017. And I could tell you that I'm in Connecticut, so I'm right next to Hartford, and Principal Perry likes to come visit from New York. And he used to be a big man when he came to visit. Now he has to hide his head because everybody's ready to throw stuff at him. So it's that nature. Yeah, he's not a star anymore here. He's not a star. A star in Hartford. He's not
yes,
a star in Bridgeport.
Remember, I was in Connecticut. I stayed with you and your wife. And I remember him. And when your governor was running for re-election and Perry was being, mentioned for being involved, et cetera, and I remember him coming up there, and I remember him coming even here in Buffalo. I definitely remember that. And the fact that people now are saying, keep your blank out of our city, our district, is so cool.
James, he was getting $35,000 a speech. So was Cory Booker. Cory Booker is no longer talking about charter schools. I mean, things have changed. Newark is in control of its schools again. Patterson are in control of their schools again. School districts across the country are gaining control of their schools back from state. So there's a lot of good. The good I see is that we're enduring. People like Vicki and I and Save Our Schools and all these groups are going. Your show's still going. But also the growth is that I'm seeing my parents in communities of color stepping up and saying, we're not going to bow down to these lies. We're going to fight back. We want local, sustainable community schools. That's the We Choose campaign. I've got a We Choose banner in my office. So.
While both of you are still here with me, let me put out some ideas that I was going to lay out if no one called and I had to do the show by myself and see what you think. First, I want to go back and talk about one of my favorite movies that I've talked about many, many times here, The Matrix. I don't know if Jesse or Vicki ever seen The Matrix, okay? I've talked about that because that film had so much in it that trying to deal with reality in such a fashion to wake people up, that to me is a classic. So let me start with, The Matrix. And again, for those of you who've been around before, you've heard me talk about The Matrix, but I'm going to say something a little differently this time in terms of, The Matrix, what it was, one of the things that it was about, one of its themes, and that is that start off with, you know, our hero was Neo, and his mentor was Morpheus. Fishburne, and Neo was, all of a sudden I'm blanking on his name. Will, help me out here, folks. Oh, Keanu Reeves, I'm sorry.
We remember the Matrix well.
Okay, now, remember that scene where Morpheus is having a face-to-face conversation with Neo, and he's trying to tell him about the real truth of his experience, and he's trying to tell Neo that, and he shows him the red pill and the blue pill, and he says to him, if you take the red pill, it's going to take you to a place where you will learn about the truth. And that's how to score that, the word, the truth, the real truth. And, but if you take the blue pill, you go back to your fake world, and you can live happily ever after, or as bored as you was before you were before, blah, 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 blah. That scene basically said so much in terms of he was saying about the truth of our experience. How many of us to this day are living in a matrix whereby we don't understand the truth of our own existence, and especially us, the teachers? Okay. When we go into our classrooms, or we go into our schools, and we then start doing what we've been told to do in terms of the standardized curriculum, preparing for the standardized test, that's a form of artificial reality. And that's not a stretch, I don't think, in terms of the classroom being that conversation between Neo and Morpheus. So that's the one thing that I'm hoping this year that teachers can see the analogy of the conversation between Morpheus and Neo and this search for truth. The truth in our existence, the red pill, the blue pill, and many of the teachers have taken the red pill themselves, and they are brave enough to want to give the kids a form of the red pill so that they can begin to see the truth of their reality, the truth of their experience. That, to me, would be maybe the biggest thing that have come out of 2017, 2016, 2015, when you and I met, Jesse, is that more teachers, based upon the various things that happened last year and before, can start taking the red pill, and now will go into their classrooms and, you know, share this with their students. Take them, their students, down the rabbit hole that Morpheus took Neo down. And remember, that was a phrase in that movie, you know, taking them down the rabbit hole versus that blue pill where you, in an existence that is artificial, but artificial in that it has been constructed by people who have the neoliberal Machiavellian agenda as their framework, their playbook, and that teachers, again, I want to see, if I live long enough, I want to see teachers realize that their relationship with their students is such that they can be the ones. They can be the Morpheus hope I said that right, when to the little Neils that they have in their class. They can help them go down that rabbit hole in order to realize real truth. Also, here's something, as I mentioned before. Students are beginning, and I'm talking about public school students, the high school, middle school. They're beginning to show signs of maybe not having taken the red pill, but something close to it, because they're beginning to become aware. I mentioned in one of our shows how students have taken the responsibility of protecting teachers who are being threatened with being fired. They're stepping up where the teachers, in my view, have not stepped up in any great numbers to protect their students. The students are stepping up and protecting their teachers. That was something that I saw in 2017 that gave me some type of optimistic hope. Something else, too, akin to all of this. Teachers, and taking that red pill, you try to do a transition here. You explain to your kids and to yourself and to others that the way things are that look normal, that this is the way it has always been, this is the way it's always going to be, that you can help the students to realize that that's not the case. That normal had been constructed just like the Matrix to make it look like this is the normal. This is the way things should be. This is the way things are. That, I'm hoping, will get some momentum coming out of 17 going in to 18. And when I this last latter point, that this is normal, that we get over to the teachers and teachers get over to their students, that this normal, this quote new normal, is nothing but a structure, a social structure, now a culture that has been constructed, that is now the dominant, at least at this point in time, and that at its heart, it seeks to dominate everyone. And what I talked about through the years, the privatization of everyone and everything, humanity and the planet, that's the reality that we've been fighting against. That's the reality that in 2017, it began to look like maybe, you know, we were losing. But as Vicki and Jesse have said, have hoped that there have been other signs coming out of 2017 that maybe there may be room for optimism. So those are just some of the things that I was going to talk about. Folks, we got maybe a minute or two left. Any quick comments on what I said?
I'd make a quick comment. I understand what you're saying. I have a little bit of concern for the teachers, parents, students, even lawmakers that can't handle the truth. So we go from the Matrix to a few good men. So I don't know that they're...
Touché, Vicki. Touché. You can't handle the truth.
You can't handle
the truth. Right. Okay. Jesse?
I'll leave it at that.
Jesse? Maybe he's not still with us. But anyway, folks, the point of today's show was this reflection, the notion of reflection. Over the weekend, I said people were reflecting and on Facebook, and the the temperature was people are discouraged. And I look at that discouragement as saying they're coming into reality. They've taken the red pill, and when the eyes are fully open and they see the matrix in which we've been operating in, it is depressing. It looks ominous. It looks like it can't be stopped, defeated, changed, and that maybe, and all their efforts in 2017, 16, 14, 15, maybe that is what's causing their stress, their depression, and it just added to my perception of 2017 and added to something that I felt I needed to talk about in terms of look at 2017, and I'll close with this, as I've always said, not in isolation, but as how it was a continuation from 2016, 15, 14, 13, 12, yes, I can count backwards, people, and how it may impact 2018, 19, 2020. Get an understanding of it. Get out of the matrix. Take the damn red pill. And then hopefully, it will give the parents, the students, the teachers more reason to come together and form a resistance. And I'll close with what we always say on the War Report. Resistance is not futile. Resistance is the highest form of democracy. Resistance is survival. And with that, thanks, Jesse. Thanks, Vicki. Thanks, everyone, for hopefully being here for our return to the air. We've been off 4 or 5 weeks. And with that, have a good rest of your Sunday. And thank you, Vicki. Jesse, if you're still there, thank you personally. If not, then see you next week.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.